I shouldn't speak about the same thing as him, although I've been assured that wouldn't have been a problem. Anyway, so the title of my talk is Charged Randall Sundrum Black Holes. So this is a slightly bold topic. So it was popular about 10 years ago. So let me just review why this is an interesting subject for those of you who maybe weren't around 10 years ago, or at least weren't doing physics 10 years ago. So the Randall Sundrum model, the brain world scenario, where the idea is that we live on a 3+1-dimensional brain in a 5D bulk, or 4+1-dimensional bulk, and there's a Z2 symmetry relating the two sides of the brain, or the two sides of the bulk. In the bulk, we have a negative cosmological constant. So the bulk theory is 5dGr with a negative cosmological constant. So the ground state in the bulk is an ABS5 solution with radius 1 over L, say, or lambda goes like minus 1 over L squared. So into this bulk, Randall and Sundrum introduced the brain, which is described by an action of the form as a tension of the brain, sigma, and you can have matter confined to the brain, described by some Lagrangian. So the idea is this is where you put the standard model. In this model, the brain is gravitating, and the gravitational back reaction of the brain, since it's a co-dimensional one object, is described by the Israel junction conditions. So the idea is you slice the bulk along some hypersurface, and you match it to another copy of the same thing, another copy because of the Z2 symmetry. And at the brain, the jump in the metric, or in the normal derivative of the metric, should satisfy the Israel junction condition, so the gravitational back reaction. It comes from the Israel equation, which relates the extrinsic curvature on the brain to the tension of the brain plus the stress tensor of any matter on the brain. And that gives a well-defined set of equations which one can try to solve. So what was interesting about this, as many of you know, and let me just remind you what the ground state looks like. So you can actually write down an explicit metric for the solution with the brain, which looks like this. So if you put the brain at z equals 0, the metric looks like this. Away from z equals 0, this is just the metric of anti de Sitter space, but you can see because of this modulus sign here, the metric is not smooth there. And precisely there, you find that there's a jump in the extrinsic curvature, or the value of the extrinsic curvature, sorry, satisfies this junction condition, provided you take the brain to have a particular fine-tuned value for the tension. So this is the Randall-Sundrum value for the tension. And that gives you a flat induced metric on the brain. If you choose a different value for the tension, you'll get a non-flat brain. So why was this interesting? Well, it's interesting mainly for one reason, which is that the dimension transverse to the brain, you can see, is non-compact. The Z direction here is non-compact. But nevertheless, Randall and Sundrum showed that gravity on the brain is four-dimensional. So using perturbation theory, at least for distances much greater than the bulk ADS length L, the gravity on the brain obeys the inverse square law. So this is a perturbative result. Where the 4D Newton constant is is the 5d Newton constant over L, which is the same formula you get in Kaluza-Klein theory if L were the radius for compact dimension. So in this model, the curvature of the bulk effectively compactifies gravity with an infinite fifth dimension. Pardon? It's finite volume, yeah, but the dimension is non-compact. It's non-compact with finite volume. Okay, so the motivation for this talk is the question which arose shortly after their work, which is, okay, this is all very good, it works nicely in perturbation theory, but what about at the nonlinear level? Do we recover the nonlinear predictions of four-dimensional general relativity from this model? So we're interested in strong gravity, which seems appropriate for this seminar. And in particular, we can ask, can this model reproduce the predictions of general relativity concerning black holes, for example? So that's the subject of this talk. So what people wanted to do 10 years ago is to find an exact solution of this system describing a black hole which is formed by gravitational collapse of matter confined to the brain. And it was fairly quickly realized that qualitatively what such a black hole should look like, it should have an event horizon which pokes off the brain and into the bulk. So there was a lot of interest in constructing or trying to construct exact solutions describing this. So there are many attempts. Find a solution, either exact or even a numerical solution describing this, and none were successful. Well, with a caveat I'll describe in a minute. Well, I should say the black holes that we were interested in are the black holes which are large compared to the ADS length, which is the regime in which we would expect to recover four-dimensional prediction. So when the four-dimensional Schwarzschild radius of the black hole is large compared to the ADS length is when we would expect to recover 4DGR. So there was a little bit of work which had some partial success in constructing numerical solutions describing black holes in this model, but those solutions described small black holes. They were black holes much smaller than the ADS scale. So we can ask, why were these attempts unsuccessful? I guess I shouldn't write it, would it? So, why were these attempts unsuccessful? So, shortly after the discovery of the Randall-Sundrum model, it was realized that it could be explained qualitatively using the ADS-CFT correspondence. Does this board always do this? Oh, I see. So using ADS-CFT, one can argue that the Randall-Sundrum model is equivalent to a 4D effective theory on the brain, which is 4D general relativity plus any matter that's present on the brain. But then the new thing is a conformal field theory, more precisely a large N strongly coupled as CFT, which is basically what you get by integrating out the bulk with a cutoff. Which goes like the inverse of the ADS length scale. So the four-dimensional effective Einstein equation is usual thing. Stress tensor of the matter, but plus the expectation value of the CFT stress tensor, which will correct the... So if this were not here, this would just be conventional 4DGR. So the deviation from the of the Randall-Sundrum model from four-dimensional general relativity is attributed precisely to the presence of this conformal field theory here, and in particular this expectation value of the stress tensor. So if you had a black hole solution in the Randall-Sundrum model, then it would be a solution of these equations, and in particular this would be non-zero. So from a 4D perspective, it would not look like a solution of the classical Einstein equation. It would look like a black hole which satisfies this modified equation, and in particular there's a quantum correction coming from this CFT.
So is that tantamount to saying that Randall-Sundrum doesn't make any sense classically, that you have to include quantum corrections?
It makes sense classically from a 5D perspective, but from,
I meant 4D.
From the 4D perspective. Yes, essentially what I'm going to say now. So what this means is that black holes, Randall-Sundrum black holes, are quantum corrected. Black holes from a 4D perspective. This point was emphasized by Emperan and collaborators a few years ago, 2002. So, one implication of this is that if we have quantum matter around, then of course a black hole will Hawking radiate. And if it Hawking radiates, then because of this back, it will Hawking radiate into CFT degrees of freedom. And because of this interaction, there will be a back reaction of the Hawking radiation on the metric. And the metric will become time dependent.
So when one is looking for these black holes on the brain, what is the bulk? Is it still ADS?
Or? No, certainly not.
So if it is not ADS, then...
You have to solve the 5D Einstein equation with
and
a...
And to find the right bulk.
That's right.
And
that's
then, so what is the intuition that we can still have an analogy with ADS-CFT if we don't have a bulk which is ADS?
Oh, well, the ADS-CFT correspondence applies much more generally than purely to an ADS bulk. I mean, if you have an ADS bulk, that just describes the ground state of the CFT.
But so you're looking at a generalized ADS-CFT-like conjecture?
Yeah, okay. yeah. I mean, it's well established that once you go away from the ground state, then you have to put other things into the bulk, and large deformations in the CFT away from the ground state correspond to changing the metric in the bulk.
I mean, if this is clicking more till later, but don't equations like that, they're usually unstable? And you really, classical GR2 has a quantum expectation values?
They can have problems.
That's all you're going to say. Okay.
I'm interested, yeah, so this is essentially qualitative, right? All you've done is replace something that you can't solve, in other words, the classical equations of the Randall-Sundrum model, with something else you don't understand, which is gravity coupled to a strongly coupled conformal field theory. So it leads to some qualitative insight, as I just mentioned, but you can't actually calculate anything with it.
Well, there maybe a related question, are there expectation values around everything else there also?
Well, I'm treating everything else classically, but this has to be treated quantum mechanically. So a brain black hole would Hawking radiate into the CFT, which implies that it will be time dependent. So this was pointed out by Tanaka. And if it's time dependent, so that means that if you have a Randall-Sundrum black hole solution, so analogous to the Randall-Sundrum analog of the Schwarzschild solution, you would expect it to be time dependent, and that makes it even harder to find because you'd be looking for a metric which depends on three coordinates. It would depend on time, the distance in the bulk, and also the radial coordinate on the brain. And numerically, people have only tried to find static metrics. So this would explain why those numerical attempts to construct solutions were unsuccessful. I should say in passing that some people have criticized this argument on the grounds that it only applies if the number of CFT states that you can radiate into goes as order n squared, which is the number of degrees of freedom of this conformal field theory at weak coupling. But this conformal field theory is strongly coupled, so it's not clear whether this order n squared is the right way to count things. So in particular, if at strong coupling this CFT were for some reason in a confining state, then the number of available states would be of order 1 rather than order n squared, and this argument would no longer be valid. So there's a little bit of debate about whether it's correct or not. One other thing I should mention is that I've been talking about the original Randall-Sundrum model, which is a model with a 3 plus 1 brain, but there was success in finding exact solutions describing brain black holes when you consider a lower dimensional model. So if you consider a 2 plus 1 brain in a 3 plus 1 bulk, then you can find exact solutions. So that was pointed out by Emperor and Horowitz and Rob shortly after the Randall-Sundrum model came along. So these would be the analog of black holes in 2 plus 1 gravity. But as most of you know, 2 plus 1 gravity doesn't actually admit black hole solutions. So that was sounds at first sight surprising, but it emphasizes this perspective here, in that the induced metric on the brain is not a solution of the classical Einstein equations, it's a solution of quantum corrected equations. So the interpretation of these solutions is that they describe quantum corrected solutions on the brain, in which a classical solution with a naked singularity, a conical singularity, is converted into a regular black hole. So that's the interpretation which has been proposed for them. But what it does mean is there's no solution of classical GR to which you can compare these black hole solutions in order to test the Randall-Sundrum model as a, in particular as to whether it can reproduce black hole physics. So it's very nice, but it's not quite what we're after from the point of view of my original motivation. Okay, so what's the new idea we're going to use here? So we see the problem seems to be something to do with Hawking radiation on the brain. So the new idea is simply to look at black holes which don't Hawking radiate, which are extreme black holes. So zero temperature, so there's no Hawking radiation. So therefore, we might expect there to exist time-independent solutions. So the idea is to investigate the analog of extreme Rijkstra-Nordström, for example, on the brain. So I'm going to be interested in considering... That doesn't come down. Oh, that goes up. I'm going to be interested in introducing a Maxwell field on the brain, and I'll look for charged black hole solutions of the Randall-Sundrum model, in which the brain black hole is going to carry an electric charge with respect to that Maxwell field. And if it's an extreme black hole, it won't radiate, so we can expect a time-independent solution to exist. We'll look for the analog of extreme RN. So the bulk solution will depend on two coordinates. Those are the distance from the brain and the radial distance along the brain. Now, two coordinates is better than three, but it's still too hard to do much with analytically. but it does suggest that maybe the people who looked at the numerics of Randall Sundrum black holes should reconsider this example, trying to find a bulk solution which can be sliced by a brain with a Maxwell field on it, rather than a vacuum brain, which is what they've tried before. So since that's too hard, we're going to take another simplifying limit. Which is to say, if I have an extreme black hole, then an extreme black hole admits a near-horizon geometry. And what we're going to do is we're going to look for that near-horizon geometry rather than the full black hole solution. So that's the slightly more modest goal that we set out to solve. So the analogue of this from the 4DGR point of view is just the near horizon geometry of an extreme Riesen-Ostrom black hole. So since that's the thing we want to compare our results to, I should describe that to you. So the near horizon geometry is ADS2 cross S2. Where each of these factors has radius q, which is the charge of the black hole. So the question is, can we determine the brain analog of this? Does it look like this? And there's one other thing we can compare once we've got this, one thing we can calculate, which is the entropy of the black hole as a function of its charge. So from the near horizon geometry, we'll be able to determine the entropy as a function of charge, and that's something we can compare to the 4D prediction. So in four dimensions, the entropy is pi q squared on G4. So that's what we want to do. We want to determine the geometry and calculate the entropy. So we're not going to determine the full black hole solution, but this approach of looking at near horizon geometries can be quite powerful in some circumstances. One thing it's particularly good at is showing you when solutions do not exist. So for example, if we solve this problem and find that there is no solution of the Randall-Sundrum model that does this, that has these properties, that looks like this, then that will show there is no black hole solution describing an extreme charged black hole on the brain, in which case we'd have to question whether the Randall-Sundrum model really does reproduce the predictions of 4DGR. One case where an analogous situation in which that approach has been used is looking for black ring solutions in anti-de Sitter space. So for example, you can use the approach of looking at a near horizon geometry to prove that supersymmetric black rings do not exist in ADS5. Okay, so how are we going to do this more precisely? So we're going to talk about near-horizon geometries. So the zeroth law of black hole mechanics tells us that the surface gravity is a constant on a Killing horizon. So if we know that we're looking for an extreme black hole on the brain, then in fact kappa must vanish everywhere in the bulk. So the horizon is degenerate everywhere, which implies that there exists a near horizon limit. Furthermore, since we're going to be interested in the analogue of extreme Riesen-Ostrom, we're interested in a static black hole, And static, well, the near-horizon geometries of static black holes are particularly simple. So a few years ago, they were classified by Kunduri, Lucetti, and myself. So any static near-horizon geometry has the form so there's some scalar, we'll call A, times a two-dimensional space, Lorentzian space of constant curvature, so this two-dimensional space here is either De Sitter space, 2D De Sitter, or it's just two-dimensional Minkowski space if k equals 0, or it's ADS2 if k is minus 1. And the horizon of the full black hole just corresponds to the Poincaré horizon in this two-dimensional space of constant curvature. So this 2D space here is essentially the reason you get an ADS2 here. So it's the analog of that. So any static near-horizon geometry has to take this form.
What's the dimension, Alan?
This is any number of dimensions. So it's a kinematic result, actually. You just take the near-horizon limit, impose staticity, and then you can do a coordinate transformation to bring the metric to this form. I should say, actually, it's a local result, but in the present context, the global topology we expect of the horizon implies, in fact, this result has to be global. So there are more general situations where it's only local. So this, in particular, we're interested in the case of a spherically symmetric black hole. So that's going to constrain this metric here, which is a three-dimensional metric. So we have an SOD minus 3, or an SO3 acting on S2s, which implies that we can simplify that a bit. So we write the metric like this. So we introduce something analogous to a radial coordinate rho. These are the S2s we're interested in. Here are my spaces of constant curvature. So this, in particular, describes the spatial geometry of the horizon. The brain will be located at a fixed value of rho, in which case you see the spatial geometry is just a two-sphere, which is what we want. Okay, so what we want to do is plug this into the bulk Einstein equation and solve. Before doing that, we should think a little bit more about it. Now, one thing that's often overlooked, or there are many poor papers on brain world black holes, which overlook the fact that you can, essentially, given a metric on the brain, you can always evolve it into the bulk and get a bulk solution. If you don't care what that bulk solution does, then you can get pretty much anything you want on the brain. So an important ingredient is bulk regularity. We want the bulk to be smooth everywhere. So if we're going to have a brain, a black hole, which is a finite horizon, then this function r of rho here is going to have to vanish somewhere. Otherwise, rho and omega here would define a cylinder, which would be infinitely extended. So in order to have a finite horizon, we need r of rho to vanish somewhere, which without loss of generality, just by shifting rho, we can take to be at rho equals 0. And then we can ask...
What would be the objection to finding a solution where the result?
Well, this wasn't true. Then the horizon in the bulk would be infinite. It would be infinitely extended. You wouldn't describe a compact black hole horizon. It would be something with cylindrical topology rather than spherical topology.
So it's not that there's some physical... That's still my limit, just like a black hole, but that's four-dimensional.
Yeah, so so one thing we have learned from these perturbative studies is that the gravitational effect in the bulk of a localized source on the brain is confined to a certain region of the bulk. So it would be very surprising if the horizon in the bulk were infinitely extended. And also from the lower dimensional picture, we learned that the horizons of the black holes on 2+1 dimensional brains are localized.
So I think you just wouldn't find a solution.
Oh, you might find solutions, but I'm not sure they've got anything to do with black holes on the brain. In fact, there are solutions with bulk fields turned on which have this form. Also, another problem they tend to have is they tend to go singular somewhere. Sorry, this should be a row. I think what you find is this function A vanishes as well, vanishes somewhere asymptotically, and that tends to lead to a singularity in the bulk.
Related question. So when you were saying you demand you're able to bulk outside of the horizon, can be singular in the bulk inside.
That's right, yeah. Any singularity would be inside the horizon. But if we're just looking at the near-horizon geometry, then there is no the horizon is just a trivial horizon in this two-dimensional space of constant curvature. So any singularity has got to appear at a particular value of rho.
So is rho the one that extends or foggles to the brain according to these
yes,
algorithms?
Yes,
yes. So rho is heading out into the
brain. Right.
Sorry, heading out into the bulk.
That's right, yeah. So the brain is going to be a particular value of rho, yeah. The simplest solution you could write down is to take the Randall-Sundrum model with a flat brain and replace the flat metric by a Schwarzschild metric. That describes something which is infinitely extended into the bulk, but that turns out to be unstable, as you say. So that's something you have to worry about if you consider that kind of thing. Okay, so we need R to vanish somewhere, and now we want the solution to be smooth. So that gives us some boundary conditions at rho equals zero. So it implies that R of rho must be rho plus order rho cubed in order for this to look like the origin of polar coordinates at rho equals zero, and so it's smooth. And similarly, smoothness tells us something about this function A of rho. It has to be some constant A0 plus a part of order rho squared. In fact, smoothness implies that all the terms here have to be odd powers of rho, and all the terms here have to be even powers of rho. So what have we got? We've just got a pair of functions of one variable, so the Einstein equations are going to reduce to ODEs for R and A. So let's now discuss the brain. Well, so the Einstein equation I should say one more thing, which is that we've got two parameters, which are k, which tells us the sine of the curvature of this, and this parameter A0. Those are, in fact, the only two things you need to solve the Einstein equation. So the solution is unique, given k and this parameter A0. So it's essentially one continuous parameter, which is A0. So let's assume the brain is that rho equals rho zero, some fixed value of rho. So the metric on the brain, I can write as some length L1 squared times this space of constant curvature plus some other length L2 squared, where this is just the function A evaluated at rho zero, and this is the function R evaluated at rho zero. So you see the metric is a product of two spaces of constant curvature, which is good because we saw that's what we're aiming for in ADS2 cross S2. So the final thing we need to put in is the matter field on the brain, which I said is going to be a Maxwell field. So we'll just take that to be purely electric. So the dual of the Maxwell two-form is just given by the electric charge Q comes the volume form on the two-sphere. So that describes the Maxwell field of charge Q. And of course, it's easy to see that the charge, if I had the full black hole solution, the charge evaluated at infinity is the same as the charge I'd evaluate in the near horizon region. So I really do know this charge Q is the charge of the full black hole solution. So then we need to, having solved the Einstein equations, we need to solve the Israel equations. So they're going to relate. So what parameters have we got? We've got a bulk solution determined by K and A0. We've got another parameter, rho 0, which is where we put the brain. And we want to relate everything to the charge Q on the brain. And this is what happens as a consequence of the Israel equations. Well, one consequence is that they give us which region of the bulk we must keep. We have to keep the region with rho less than rho 0. Rho has to increase towards the brain. That's familiar to... This is always a property of a positive tension brain. And another consequence, which is easy to derive, this is if you view rho here as an evolution parameter, the Einstein equations decompose into second order evolution equations and a first order constraint, which I'll call the Hamiltonian constraint. If you combine that with the Israel equations, you can derive the following formula, which I'll try to remember correctly. So one consequence of this is immediate. The right-hand side is negative, and so must the left-hand side be. And that's only possible if this discrete parameter k takes the value minus 1. So we really do have an ADS2 cross S2 on the brain, rather than, say, de Sitter 2 cross S2 or R2 cross S2. So that's good. We've reproduced the fact that we should be getting an ADS2 cross S2. Well, there's a difference from 4DGR. Again, we can just see from this equation, if k is minus 1, since the right-hand side there is negative, it tells us that L1 squared is less than L2 squared. And I remind you, in 4DGR, we know that L1 is equal to L2 is equal to Q. So we already see a difference from GR emerging. Okay, so let's go on to discussing the solutions.
So could we use here anyway the fact that we are on the positive tension brain to get this constraint?
Well, the brain tension I'm always taking to be equal to the Randall-Sundrum value. So in other words, if I switch off the Maxwell field, I just get a flat brain. Yeah, it's a critical brain. So how do we solve the system? So firstly, we determine the bulk. Which gives us a one parameter solution labeled by A0. And then we impose the Israel equations, which relates this parameter A0 and the other parameter rho 0 uniquely to the charge on the brain Q. So before I show you what the solutions look like in general, which we have to determine numerically, we were not able to solve these equations analytically, and in fact I don't think it's possible to do so in general, let me show you some particular solutions you can determine analytically for particular values of Q.
Any near horizon geometry has that form, and when you specialize in spherical symmetry, then you've got that thing you took. So if that's any near horizon thing, you plug it through here, you're getting something extremal. But what if I wanted something that wasn't extremal? Like, what I understand is you seem to be led to the extremal thing from this general ansatz, but well, then how would I get a non-extreme?
Well, you can't. The near-horizon geometries only exist for extreme black
holes.
Oh,
so you're only... Okay,
As I said, the motivation was to look... We only expect a time-independent solution to exist in the extremal case.
Oh, right.
So and if it's extreme...
time-dependent otherwise.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And also, for a general non-extreme black hole, there's no analog of the near-horizon geometry you could use to simplify the problem.
That's right, it's the time-dependent.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a special solution. So if you choose the special value A0 is L over 2, where L is the ADS radius, you find that the unique solution there is just that A should be a constant. I should probably have kept my metric somewhere. Let me write it down again. So the metric looks like that. So this function A is a constant, and the function R has the form L over root 2 showing root 2 rho on L. This solution is particularly simple. It's just the product of ADS 2 with three-dimensional hyperbolic space. So that's the bulk solution. Then if you impose the Israel equation, which corresponds to slicing this hyperbolic space along a certain surface, you find that shine root 2 rho 0 over L is 1. So that fixes rho 0, where the brain is. You find that the charge Q is L over root 2. And you find that the radius, the radii L1 and L2 induced on the brain for the ADS2 and the S2 are given by L1 is Q over root 2 and L2 is Q. So the point here is that L1 and L2 are of order Q and Q is of order L. So this describes a black hole on the brain whose size is of order the ADS size, so it describes a small black hole. So although there's a big discrepancy from the prediction of 4DGR, which would have this equal to Q, that doesn't matter because this is a small black hole for which we don't expect agreement with GR anyway. Another special solution is given by A0 equals L. To take A0 equal to L, what you find, well, it's very simple, the bulk solution is just ADS5. So for that special value of L, the bulk solution you get is just ADS5. And in this case, you can't solve the Israel equations. So those are the two special solutions that we can determine analytically. For other solutions, we have to resort to numerics, which I've got on the computer.
In the second case, the solution exists if you put Q equal to 0?
Well, if you set Q equal to 0, well, no, because we've got ADS5 here in a slicing adapted to ADS2 cross S2 slices, whereas to get the... Oh. Okay, good. Good for a moment. Okay. So here's some plots from our paper. So these are the functions A and R for different values of A0. So starting down here at the bottom, we start with small A0, this first curve. We gradually increase A0. This straight line is the constant solution I just described. So you can see for A0 less than L over 2, A0 just decreases and eventually hits 0. This actually corresponds to a curvature singularity in the bulk. But for A0 greater than L over 2, the solutions diverge exponentially. The analogous solutions for R always diverge. For the solutions corresponding to these cases, R diverges as you approach a certain finite value of rho, which is the same finite value as this goes to 0. This, again, is a curvature singularity. But these other cases all diverge exponentially. So these are what the bulk solutions look like. Now, in general, given these both solutions, we can now ask, can we solve the Israel equations? And you can, provided A0 is not too big. So you can determine a unique solution, determine any solution which is unique. So a solution to the Israel equations for any value of A0 between 0 and L. So L, remember, corresponds to the ADS5 bulk. And what you find, so one thing you might worry about is, well, look, in these cases here, we've got this curvature singularity in the bulk. We don't want a curvature singularity in the bulk. We want it to be regular. But there's not a problem because you find that rho 0 is less than the value, let's call it rho 1, where you have a curvature singularity. So in other words, when you do the slicing to put the brain in, you throw away the part of the space-time that contains this curvature singularity. So it's not a problem. What you find is that rho 0 and q are monotonic in A0, and they diverge as A0 tends to this critical value L. So we can cover the full range of the charge q. So therefore, we can treat q as the independent variable, which is what we want to do. So we have a one parameter of bulk solutions labeled by the electric charge q, which can take any value between 0 and infinity, just as we expect. So what we want to do now, then, is compare physical quantities on the brain to what we get from four-dimensional GR, which we're now in a position to do. Remember, the things we're interested in, first, L1 and L2, the radius of the ADS2 and the S2 on the brain. We want to compare those with the predictions of conventional 4D GR. And that's what I've given here. So ignore the bottom curve for the moment. This is the ratio of, the top curve is the ratio of L2 over Q. Remember, Q is the 4D GR prediction for what L2 should be. So the ratio should 10 to 1 for a large black hole. And you can see it approaches 1 very quickly. And similarly for L1 over Q, also approaches 1 very quickly. So for a black hole with a charge more than about 5 times the ADS scale, you very rapidly reach complete agreement with four-dimensional general relativity. This is the plot of rho 0. I should have said, you can see immediately from this, that since the horizon, the brain is at rho equals rho 0, and the horizon ends at rho equals 0, that implies that the proper length of the horizon in the bulk is just rho 0. So rho 0 just describes how far the horizon pokes into the bulk. This is what it looks like. It behaves logarithmically as a function of q. That is something that, in fact, has been expected on general grounds. And so we see it reproduced here. So we get a good agreement for the geometry for large black holes. The other thing I said we wanted to compare was the entropy. Here we have to say, what is the 5D entropy? So the 4D entropy, we know, it's just the value from 4D GR, which I wrote down somewhere, pi q squared over g4, I think. To get the 5D entropy, we have to calculate the horizon of the 5D geometry. So the 5D area is 2 pi on g5 times the integral of the square of r squared, which is the area of this part of the metric multiplied by 2 because there are two sides to the brain. And so we can plot that compared to the 4D entropy, which if I write it in 5D language, looks like this. I just relate G4 to G5 using the Randall-Sundrum formula. And that was also on this plot I've just shown you. This bottom curve is the ratio of the 5D entropy to the 4D entropy. So you can see it starts off, the 5D entropy starts off smaller than the 4D entropy, but as you increase Q, gradually it tends to the 4D result up here. So again, we have agreement with 4D GR. Although you can see the entropy approaches the 4D value more slowly than the other parameters do. So these results so far have just been determined numerically, but it turned out that it is actually possible to do quite a lot analytically in this model in the limits of a large black hole. I don't have time to describe how we did this, but let me just describe the results. So the analytic results. What we find is that at leading order we agree with 4DGR, but there's a calculable correction. So these are the results for these two length scales, L1 and L2. You can see at leading order, this is for large Q. This is an expansion in Q over L. So for Q much bigger than L, this is what the solutions look like. So at leading order, they agree, and there are corrections of order 1 over Q squared, which you can see is the reason why these curves approach 1 so quickly. That's a 1 over Q squared deviation. For the entropy, you can do the same thing. So you get the 4D entropy with a correction, but the correction is logarithmic. Which is the reason for this slower convergence in the entropy curve there. So this is an analytic proof then that well, I think it is strong evidence that the Randall-Sundrum model can indeed reproduce the physics of black holes, which are large compared to the ADS length, which is our main result. One interesting thing that one can do with these formulae is rewrite them in terms of the CFT. Remember, I told you that in 4D language, the model we're considering is equivalent to 4DGR coupled to a Maxwell field, coupled to this CFT. So we could rewrite this all in terms of the CFT. And what you get is the following. Remember, the CFT is an SUN gauge theory at large n. So now we're doing the same expansion as before, but n here is the number of colours in the gauge field. So these are the formulae rewritten in 4D effective theory language. What's interesting, so this is supposed to describe the quantum corrections to the black hole arising through the interaction with a strongly coupled gauge theory. What you can do now is you can compare these with, say, what you'd get from gravity interacting with a weakly coupled gauge theory, which in fact is something people had worked out a few years ago. So the names here are Fasayev, Rodman, and Sergei Solodukhin, who have calculated, for example, the corrections of a weakly coupled scalar field, for example, to the black hole entropy. And indeed, you find precisely these logarithmic corrections. Here we just multiply essentially by the number of fields present. Furthermore, Solodukhin has considered gravity, the corrections to the ADS2 process 2 solution arising from weakly coupled fields. And again, they're precisely of this form. They're Q squared minus a constant. So these results are in qualitative agreement with what you'd expect from weakly coupled field theory. So remember, I did say there was some debate about whether intuition based on weakly coupled field theory is applicable in this situation, well, here you wouldn't go wrong if you based your intuition on what happens at weak coupling. It could be, of course, that once you go to finite temperature, that's no longer true, but at least at zero temperature, you're not led astray by thinking about things at weak coupling, even though it's really a strongly coupled system. So let me end with a few open questions. So the biggest open question here is, of course, the full black hole solution. I've told you about the near-horizon geometry and shown that you can recover the predictions of 4DGR from that, but of course, it would be nice to determine the full black hole solution, which I think is something that is within the scope of what people have already looked at numerically. Let me emphasize that it doesn't seem very likely that we'd be able to determine the full black hole solution analytically, simply because even for the near horizon limits, we had to resort to numerics to determine the solution. So the full solution seems less likely, even less likely to be something we could determine analytically. Secondly, well, we've looked at a charged black hole. In principle, one could also consider a rotating black hole on the brain and try the same thing. But then you're back to the problem that things would depend on two coordinates rather than one. One thing I didn't mention is that if we just throw away the brain, so if we ignore the brain, and we take A0 to be greater than this value L over 2, at which it collapses to a singularity, then... So if we're in one of these top curves here, then in that case, the bulk solution is asymptotically locally ADS. With a conformal boundary. Which is ADS2 cross S2. With an arbitrary radius between these two factors. So our bulk solutions therefore describe the gravitational dual to n equals 4 super Yang Mills in this particular background for any value of the radius here. So that may have some applications at some point. And you can generalize this whole construction, of course, to similar boundaries. You could do the same kind of bulk for ADS3 cross S2 or ADS... 2 cross S2 cross S2 and so on. And the final comment is these bulk solutions are very similar to solutions which have been discussed in the math literature. There's a class of solutions which essentially would correspond to positive curvature here, which were constructed by Christoph Böhm. He was mainly interested in the case of positive cosmological constant in the bulk, because then you can construct exact, well, you can not exact, you can demonstrate the existence of solutions of this form, which describe inhomogeneous Einstein metrics on the sphere. So this kind of metric has been discussed before, although not so much in the case of negative curvature. One other case, well, there are two other cases in which this is relevant. We've looked at negative curvature here. If you took the curvature here to be zero, the bulk solutions are precisely the same solutions as Keith Copsey and Gary Horowitz looked like when they looked at when they were studying n equals 4 super Yang Mills on S1 cross S2 with a time direction. Some solutions of this kind have been discussed before, and it would be interesting to get a better understanding of them by looking at these other cases. So anyway, I better stop now. So thank you very much for listening.
How hard would this be to deal with rotating extremal holes?
I think it would be as hard, well, maybe as hard as finding the full bulk solution for a charged extreme black hole. It becomes a two-parameter, there are two coordinates in the game then. So
you'd have to do a numerical integration of two?
Probably, unless you got lucky with the Einstein equation and could solve it explicitly. But I think it would be hard. I think the thing to do would be to look at the full solution for the charged case. Well, I'm not saying, yeah, so this is a question, is this n here in these formula, in these formulae, really counting the number of degrees of freedom? That's one question.
It's counting the n big
Yeah, so I guess there you might think it is.
I'm just saying, let's say it's counting the number of states. Then it seems hard to...
Well, then yeah.
The temperature, the number of states goes down.
Yeah, I guess the question is how does this formula get modified as you raise the temperature there? So if the T-dependent part of it didn't depend on N, for example...
I'm just saying, if the number of states goes down...
It's not really the number of states, this is the number of fields. I mean, this is all at zero temperature, so presumably these fields are in their ground state.
Right, so it's like saying the entropy of the ground state is higher than the entropy of the state of the ground state. Where is the temperature going again? The question is just whether the entropy at zero temperature could conceivably... There's a lower bound here. I would interpret that as a lower bound in China temperature, because
it would be a weird system. Yeah, but the question is more, what do the temperature effects do to the bulk solution? Do they make it time dependent or not? In a sense, this is just vacuum polarization, these effects. This is just coming from the stress tensor in the ground state. It's not really sensitive to the particle spectrum of the theory, I think. But my interpretation when I see this is that probably intuition based on weak coupling is probably valid.